Welcome to the Good Work Show, where we highlight the good that makes Atlanta work. To learn more about the show and how your company can tell their story, like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Good Work Show. Now, please welcome the hosts of the Good Work Show, Elaine Armstrong and Trenise Lyons.
Audience, welcome to this week's Good Work Show. We are back with another episode for you, and today we're going to be talking about transitional housing and homelessness a little bit.
Yes. Yeah. So we've had a lot, you know, I feel like we go through cycles where we talk about particular topics. And at one point we were doing a lot of human trafficking.
Yeah. Yeah. We did have a lot of that. And then was it last year? Yeah. We had environmental stories. Then we had a lot of like mentoring, youth mentoring
we
stuff
did.
About a year and a half ago.
And then at some point we did like we had the farmers. Like, we had the urban farming and then we had the composting that gave the
Food
compost
Alliance.
To the farm.
Yeah, yeah.
So right now, apparently, so this show, the theme is homelessness and transitional housing and very important topics in our community. And I think some of the things sometimes what we'll see is that things cycle as they are, we become aware of the problems and they're growing. One of the things that we kind of see tied into the whole idea of homelessness is affordable housing. And we know that is an issue in our community.
It is.
I mean, the fact that
I wouldn't want to pay rent.
I mean, honestly, and when I say
this, I don't think I could afford to pay rent.
I mean, I will say this, this is a champagne problem. So this is not at all equating to what, you know, we're talking about. But when I moved to Atlanta, it was, I probably would not have been able to afford to rent. I had to buy something in order to live where I wanted to live. And thankfully, I was in a position that I was able to have that choice and make that decision. But I know that I know this for sure. The condos in my communities that are rented are three times my mortgage. And there's just no way I could afford I couldn't afford it. Like, I would not be able to pay that. So,
And nor should you.
No,
I mean, for what you are getting, I mean, obviously you bought for the same amount that it, and this is in the same thing. It's in the same complex.
It's like
you
should next door.
Right.
Like, it's
so nor should you.
Right. So
pay that much.
So the market,
nor should anybody pay that.
Exactly.
Much.
And the market is driving so many things, but there are a lot of people who are getting left behind.
Yes.
There's a,
yes.
I mean, the number of people that are getting left behind, the number of people who come to this community and you're living and working and you're seeing your community change around you.
And usually it's changing for the better, and it's pricing you out of the neighborhoods that you grew up in, that your parents grew up in, that you know and love. And then where do you go? It forces you to another area of the city. And then we think, because we see gentrification and we see all of these things happening and development happening, oh, things are getting better. No, the problems are just getting migrated somewhere else.
Right.
Forced somewhere else.
Right. And a lot of the times it's people who have been in a community, have invested in community, have fought for that community for years.
Built it.
And then as soon as it starts to get a little bit better, or conditions improve, or there's new resources, or heck, a grocery store comes available, then all of a sudden, those folks that have kind of lived there and kind of made that area desirable for so long are getting pushed out, and they are having to find other resources. So there's a lot there. And then also just the idea of, you know, living wages and all these discussions when we start talking about, you know, how close a lot of people live to experiencing homelessness. Like, it's
everybody. I mean, it could be a medical issue.
Yeah.
I mean, that could take anybody out, and there's no way you can predict it, and some cases, no way to stop it. So there's that. I mean, it could just be anything.
So we're going to...
Or disaster.
I mean, it could be anything.
Yeah.
Quite honestly, it could be anything.
Yeah.
It could be, you know, one or two missed paychecks or, you know, anything
one
that happens. One missed paycheck.
I don't want to miss any of my paychecks.
Ever.
I like them all.
I mean... Yeah, absolutely.
Them are necessary.
Because it's, you know, there's only so many times that you can, you know, go without. So it's one of the, so I definitely think it's one of those issues that hopefully we can continue to talk about. And, you know, some of the stuff that's happening within the city of Atlanta and coming out of the mayor's office and looking at the, you know, having an office of that, you know, housing and looking at affordable housing in a way. I mean, I remember there were, however many years ago this was, Atlanta used to be the place that you could come and get, like, you know, like a 7-bedroom house for like $10,000. And that was like the whole thing. Like, you could come here and live in this city comfortably and affordably, especially.
That's
when
why a lot of people moved here. Exactly. I mean, that is why we have so many transplants for its affordability. It was the opportunity that Atlanta had. And for many of those people, that's exactly what Atlanta is. It is a land of opportunity.
I mean, I look about when I lived in D.C. and I was paying rent for what I paid, you know, for a 1-bedroom in an okay neighborhood. I mean, I left my trunk open one day and nobody stole anything, so I figured it was a good neighborhood.
Did you have anything stealable?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I don't know how the trunk opened. I just walked out one day.
Probably your key fob.
Probably. And my trunk was open and I was like, well.
Or maybe they went in there and was like,
never mind. So it's like the duality of the neighborhood. Like, I left the car open and nobody stole anything. The day I moved in, somebody was shot on the doorstep. I mean, it's like one of those things. Mm-hmm. But I think about how much I paid for that place. And I was like, well. And then think about my friends that lived in the South or lived in Atlanta. And they're like, oh, that's what you're paying? I live like in a 3-story townhouse and, you know, whatever. Right. Which then probably was true.
Yeah.
But now it's not feasible and it's not the same. So see, these are really important conversations to have. And both of the ladies who will be coming on. So Marlene White from the Decatur Cooperative Ministry is going to join us. And then Bartola Anderson from Positive Transition Services. Both of them are going to come on and share with us the work that their organizations are doing to help people who are experiencing homelessness and people who may be on the cusp. And how we can try to catch them before they're pushed into that experience. How can we stop that from happening? Because it's so much easier to prevent a problem than it is to solve a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're doing today.
Yep, that's right. So also one of the things that we wanted to share with you, too, is that we have a new career center that's opening up. So it opens up on January 26th. It's it's Monday.
27th.
Okay, Monday, January 27th, which is.
Because the 26th is the Sunday we had this conversation yesterday.
Oh, really? Okay. January 27th, which is.
A Monday.
It's a Monday. It is our Old National Career Center. And talking about areas of need, Old National is one of those areas. That is on the southern side of the city. We opened a store there about a year ago. Actually, in August. Was it in August or about a year ago? I can't keep up with when we open the stores anymore.
I have.
It goes so fast.
It was in the. It was warm.
You know what? Actually, it was.
It was in April.
It was in April.
It was. I just. That's how I remember our stores.
Because it was near spring break, and it was April when we pushed it back because it's prosperity. Anyway, April. So, but we're coming back with a career center. It's one of those locations. It'll be our first one in that particular part of the city. So obviously, there's an area of great need there for people who are looking for employment. So we want you to share that with your family, friends, people who might be looking for work. Stop by, come and check out the services if you don't know what happens in a Goodwill Career Center, but it's free and open to the public. So that means anybody who is looking for work, who is looking for a better job, who is looking to skill up, who needs training in a particular area, who just wants to brush up on computer skills, or they are currently underemployed. Maybe they're part of the working poor and want to you know, kind of move up or get a better job or get another job, because sometimes maybe that first job just isn't enough to make ends meet. We have resources that are going to be there and open and available to them. So we definitely want you to come out. It's co-located with our store that is there. So they can easily just go next door and find some work-ready attire if they need that or resources for that. But or if you're just shopping, you're like, hey, I would love to kind of know a little bit more about how I can skill up or, you know, tell somebody else about finding it work, then you can go next door. So it works both ways. So Monday, January 27th is our grand opening for that location, but then every day thereafter, besides the ones that were closed, you'll be able to come and use the resources.
We're only closed on Sundays.
Yeah, only on Sundays. And then, of course, like holiday schedule. But anyway, come visit us at our new career center. It's fantastic. We don't always get an opportunity to open a new career center. So this is big for us because it gives us an opportunity to serve more people in that area. Every year we're serving 25,000 people or more with connecting them to jobs. We actually serve way more than that, but connecting that many to jobs, our goal is 25,000 this year. This is going to help us do just that in an area that we haven't been in before. So it's pretty great.
And if you're listening to all that and you're like, that's great, but I'm good.
Mm-hmm.
Come buy something.
Yes. Or at any one of the other 65 stores that are near you.
Or make a donation. Because
Or you buy on our e-commerce
or
site.
Or you can buy on our e-commerce site. That's true. But all of that, the donations that you make, the things that you purchase in our stores, all of that goes to help support those job training programs that Elaine was just talking about in our career center. So it's so important that everybody has a role to play in this.
Yes.
So if you're...
You have to go good willing.
Yes.
Yes. Whatever that means to you. Donate, shop,
prop,
put people to work, volunteer, talk to your neighbors or friends. If you did not know, Goodwill's mission is about putting people to work. We do that through the sale of donated goods at our stores and collection at our donation centers. So, jump in and help out in the cycle of good.
Yeah. There is room for everybody, and no one part is any more or less important than the other, because without any of them,
it doesn't work.
It does not work. It's like if you, it's a wheel, and if it goes flat, one side.
It's like boop, boop, boop.
We may get there, but it'll be slower, and you'll mess up your rooms. So,
I don't think we would get there. I think we need everybody.
We do need everybody.
Everybody come out and go good willing. So, so we're excited about today's show. We don't always get a chance to have a theme of focus, but it just worked out that today we do. So
we don't plan this?
Yes, we plan it. We plan it very well. But anyway, thank you so much for tuning in. You're in for a treat today. Stick around with us. You're listening to The Good Work Show. Audience, welcome back to The Good Work Show. We are excited to be sitting here with Bartola Anderson, who is the founder and executive director of Positive Transition Services, Inc. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you. And by the way, we were talking before we start. She looks fabulous. She has purple eyeshadow on. My spirit. I'm telling you, I love purple, but I love a purple eyeshadow. Anyway,
we already have good vibes.
I know. This is going to be a fantastic interview.
Yes.
So tell us about your organization that you founded, Positive Transition Services. What's the organization about and what's your mission?
Okay. So Positive Transition Services was birthed here in the Atlanta area in 2013. I'm the executive director and founder of Positive Transition Services. Our mission is to connect, transform, and empower lives to generate happiness, hope, and independence. We do that primarily through permanent supportive housing. And many people don't know what permanent supportive housing is. Have you ever heard of the term?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah. So tell us so that we may know, but not know that it's called that.
Right.
That's possible.
That is possible.
Okay, so I'll break it down for you in two segments. Permanent means that the resident can reside in our program for any length of stay. We won't dictate their stay. Mm-hmm. Supportive means we're going to wrap those services around that resident. And then housing means we will provide safe, clean, affordable housing to those individuals.
Mm-hmm.
That's fantastic. And I understand what you mean, but I didn't know it was called that. So we all learned something today.
That's right.
But tell us about, so whenever we get the person who founded an organization on the show, we always like to ask and get the story of what made you wake up one day and said, well, here's a problem that I've identified, and now I'm going to take that next step and do something about it. So tell us a little bit about how we got here.
Right. So I think I was birthed with helping. It's in my blood. I come from a family of nurses. Mm-hmm. And I earned my bachelor's degree in psychology. And I worked for the Department of Human Services for 10 years. And during that time, I realized I was not able to help families the way I felt like they needed to be helped. It was pretty much crippled because of policies and protocols. So from that, I decided to birth PTS.
Okay.
Fantastic. So tell us about the services. When folks come to you, when clients come to you, families come to you, what are you able to provide to them?
Great question. We provide within 48 hours mental health services, job placement. We have on-site volunteer psychiatrists that will come in to help the individuals. Of course, those basic needs, food, clothing, free Wi-Fi, transportation assistance, and volunteer opportunities. Those are just some of these services that we provide.
Wow.
And you do this in a, like, do you have a facility where folks are going? So tell us a little bit about how it all works. So, like, if I were a person coming for help and I walked through the door, so take us kind of through what that process would be like for that person.
So originally we have a phone interview and then we have a face-to-face interview. And from that, you come on site, you take a look at the environment, and if it's something that fits, and their energy is there, then you're more than welcome to stay.
Okay. And then, so you have, you actually have beds there for people to stay there. So how many people are you serving at a time or?
Right. So the capacity is 28 individuals.
Okay.
And we have two programs. One is non-funded. So it is a low-income self-pay program where individuals actually pay out of pocket. But here's the thing, we report their rental payments to all three credit bureaus.
Oh, fantastic.
So
nice.
It is basically as if they're paying a mortgage. Okay. And we do this to accelerate their FICO score so we can transition them into their own place.
Oh, nice. Yes.
So we have a lot of veterans, those that are working paycheck to paycheck. We actually have individuals who have gone to college or in managerial positions that actually come to us for permanent support.
Okay. Yeah. So how do people find you, Bartola? Like, are they, I know you said you do a phone interview and you kind of go through that process to make sure that they're right for your programs and services. But how do they find you other than, you know, people who might be listening or watching the show today and can refer to you? But how do you normally get your clients?
Most often we receive our clients through state agencies, emergency shelters, hospitals, from mental health hospitals where individuals may be about to be discharged. They reach out to us, and then word of mouth. The Veterans Administration, they reach out to us. And we also have a reentry partnership housing program. So that is managed and monitored by the Department of Community Affairs and the Department of Community Supervision. With that program, it is state funded, and we are able to house individual free for up to 90 days, those that are coming out of incarceration.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, and that's super important, though, for those folks who may not have a family, a home to go back to, but to have somewhere that's safe. And then there are people who can help them and help them with the transition of getting back into the world of work and getting clothing and just those everyday sort of things that once you are released, you may not know how to get other than ways that may not necessarily be right or legal to do. And so it's so good that you have a program that can sort of capture that right off in 90 days to get them started and get that kickstart that they might need to get back into the society. So,
yes, we hold ourselves accountable, PTS or Positive Transition Services. We like to call it a 7-day countdown. So the moment an individual is released under the RPH or the Reentry Partnership Housing Program, we have 7 days. What does that look like? Picture ID, birth certificate, social security card. They need to quickly gain employment. Right. Some may need to go directly into receiving emergency medical treatment and psychiatric care because of past trauma. So no matter what route that individual needs to take, we make sure that happens within 7 days.
That's fantastic.
That is fantastic. And getting that paper, we've talked to organizations before that talk about the idea of getting an ID and what that process can be, getting a, you know, getting your birth certificate, getting a social security. I mean, like, and those things cost money. You have to be able to pay for those. So, you know, I can imagine that's not an easy task if you were to come out without having any of that information or any of those resources available right off the bat.
That's right.
Exactly. And research has stated that 150,000 permanent supportive housing sites are needed, but there are actually only 50,000 available.
Wow.
So last year alone, nearly 200 individuals reached out to us for housing. We were only able to provide 30% to those individual permanent supportive housing. And our goal is to increase that to 20% this year.
So how do you get there? So what do you need to close that gap?
We definitely need more people on board that are passionate and willing to spread the word about this affordable housing crisis in Atlanta. I don't know if you know that the average median income is about $55,000, but about 30% are living in poverty, making around $17,000 for a family of four. A one-bedroom is over $1,200. How can we make it?
That's so true. And that's such, you know, and that's one of those things that we talk about so much on this show. We've talked about, you know, homelessness and all that kind of stuff. And time after time, you keep hearing about, there's those problems and it's not who you think it is all the time. And, you know, the idea of affordable housing being such the thing that's missing, you know, in this whole thing. So, tell us real quickly then, you know, how do people connect with you right off the bat? Like, okay, this all sounds interesting. So where do I go? Like, how do I get started? You know, give us your website, give us that information so that people can have that information.
Sure. So our website is ptsga.org. Again, that's ptsga.org. You can also find us on Instagram, which is ptsatlorg. Or just type Positive Transition Services, and we're also on Facebook as well.
Okay. Cool. So we've got about a minute and a half, Artola, left. Tell us about a story of someone that you might have helped. And obviously, if you need to protect their identity, definitely do that. But we want to just hear about how your organization and the mission and the folks that are working with you and for you have helped change the life so we can kind of hit it home for our listeners.
Exactly. So there was a veteran that was in need of an emergency housing placement. So we received the phone call, and that particular agency actually transported the gentleman there. When he arrived, you could barely notice his identity because of all the things he had gone through emotionally, physically, sleeping under the bridge. After interviewing him, we found out that he had been a pilot in the military. He had been living under a bridge for close to a year. Of course, substance abuse was an issue. He was facing issues with depression and PTSD. And from that, the 7-day track, we got him acclimated, got him back into society, and now he's thriving and he's giving back to new residents that are coming into the program, and he's actually ready to go on and transition into his own place. And he looks totally different, totally different, but he has brought so much joy and inspiration to some of the other residents that are coming in and have walked that walk. He's able to give back now. But when you see him, you would have never thought that someone with that status, that education background, had actually traveled down the road of homelessness.
Wow. So. Well, Bartella, thank you so much for coming on the show. PTSGA.org is the website, so make sure that you check it out. Support the work that they're doing. Thank you so much for coming on the show today. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to The Good Work Show. Welcome back to the show. We are sitting here with Marlene White, who is the executive director of Decatur Cooperative Ministry. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, so tell us all about your organization, Decatur Cooperative Ministry, and the mission of the organization.
Well, Decatur Cooperative Ministry is a 50-year-old nonprofit that is based in DeKalb County. Our mission is to help families facing homelessness settle into safe, stable homes and build healthy lives filled with peace, hope, and opportunity.
All right.
Well, like we tell everybody who comes in the show, when they tell us our mission, we're like, oh, that's just that little thing.
Yeah.
Just trying to solve. That is impressive. And the way that you do it is interesting. You have a number of different programs and things that you do. So we're going to take them one by one because we really want to dig in. We've got the time to really talk about what happens in these different programs. So first, let's talk about Hagar's House. So what happens as a part of that program and what kind of support are you offering people who come to you through that program?
Well, Hagar's House is our emergency shelter and assessment center. And families with minor children are housed there temporarily for up to 90 days. And during that time, they're offered intensive case management and supportive services. We also, we provide assessment. And through that assessment, we learn the barriers to housing stability. And our goal is to help them to remove the barriers that prevent them from obtaining permanent housing. We offer life skills and parenting skills and services that connect them with childcare and resources to overcome the obstacles.
So tell us, dig in a little bit on those barriers, because mm-hmm. that's one thing that I do think that it's important for our audience to hear. So we've talked to a number of organizations that work in the space of homelessness and trying to get people into secure housing. But we always like to try to hit on the causes of it, because I think people sometimes still just put it to the back of their minds of, oh, people are lazy or those people have problems or whatever. Mm-hmm. But those aren't always the issue. Like, folks do have issues, but you know, talk to us a little bit about what some of those barriers are and how people can unexpectedly find themselves in that vulnerable position of not having a secure, stable place to live.
Well, a lot of our families count childcare, the lack of affordable childcare, as an issue that prevents them from obtaining employment. And because without reasonable childcare, how are you to feel good about being away at work?
Right.
That's one. Another is the issue of a living wage and affordable housing.
Mm-hmm.
The notion of affordable housing, affordable for whom,
mm-hmm.
you know, in our community is a real challenge. And so while a lot of people do think that the majority of our families do, there's some way they're at fault, which is why they found themselves homeless.
Mm-hmm.
But our families, and a lot of them have experienced, they're homeless because of poverty. Mm-hmm. They're homeless because of a lack of resources. You know, they don't know which way to turn. And so they appreciate the case management and the supportive services because then they have an ally.
Yeah. So that's one of the programs that you have. You also, and that's a program for families, but you also have Family House and Family Success programs. So tell us a little bit about how those work and maybe how they might differ from Hagar's House.
Well, both of those programs are longer term housing programs for families with minor children. So the Family House program is a transitional housing program. And with transitional housing, families can be housed for 6 to 8 months, during which time they receive the same case management and supportive services. But those families tend to have a little more significant issue, and so therefore they need more time in order to resolve their barriers.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Family Success Program is a permanent supportive housing program, which was designed for families that have a member of the household who has a chronic health condition, a disabling condition. And that disabling condition has caused them to have bouts of homelessness or significantly longer term bouts of homelessness. And so they need the supportive services coupled with the housing in order to maintain housing. And while for that particular program, there isn't a definitive you must exit on this day.
Mm-hmm.
What we do is we hope that by giving the family the supportive services, helping them connect with the resources, that they're able to stabilize in such a way where they can go out on their own and we can offer that opportunity to yet another family.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So that would be a situation kind of like if you needed a caregiver. So similar to child care, like there needs to be somebody home so that somebody else isn't able to work. But you guys are actually able to help connect the family to a resource to get some of that support. Is that kind of how that works? Or
what will happen is, so let's say we recently had a family and mom was diagnosed with cancer. So she had stage 4 cancer. And so she was out of work. She was getting treatment. Okay. And so in that time, you know, she lost her housing. You know, she lost all of her support. And so we were able to put her in longer term housing so that way she could focus on her health, you know, get better and make decisions as to what her next steps were without worrying about her housing. And her children who were school age could go to school, come home to mommy, and know that there was that stability they could count on.
Yeah. That's fantastic.
So you're serving Decatur Cooperative Ministry, but are you serving all of DeKalb or is it City of Decatur? Tell us about your sort of the scope of your work and then also maybe a little bit about how great the need is, because I assume that you've been around for 50 years, the organization's been around for 50 years, and there's still a need for it. So, you know, these issues are things that people are still experiencing every day.
Right. Well, we have been around for 50 years and we've evolved in that time. We have been a convener of services, so helping churches and schools to resolve issues of things like community issues, like latchkey children. And so we're helping other people to begin after school programs and things of that nature. And then in the last 30 years, we actually began providing direct services where we're actually opened our shelter and opened the other housing programs. And we are serving all of DeKalb County and not just the city of Decatur or any particular community or zip code. We're serving all of DeKalb County.
Great.
And the need continues to evolve because a lot of it is connected to the economy. You know, as our recent recession, housing challenges, you know, all of that, you know, has a direct correlation to, you know, how people are able to maintain and sustain housing. You know, the poverty, you know, line, you look at that, you look at what people are working with in terms of their resources to obtain and maintain housing. Those things keep people coming back to us. And as people come back to us or come to us and they're looking for support, what we know is that we take a relational approach to providing that service. People don't want you to put a Band-Aid on what's wrong with the situation. They've lost their housing. They've got challenges. They want, you know, they want a resolution. And so getting the case management and the partnership, you know, to use the phrase, teaching the man the fish, you know, not just giving him a fish. You know, that will allow us to work with people in a relational and deeper way. And so while, you know, we serve over 1,000 people a year, you know, we're not shooting for the numbers. We're shooting for the depth of relationship and the depth of impact with our clients.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in every family that you touch, there's people behind it. There's a story behind it.
Right.
Whether you impact 1 or 1 million, there's the kids. And so you think about being able to be an intersection in the trajectory of their life and turn it some way more positive. That's going to trickle down to their children and their grandchildren. So so the numbers are always, you know, we're nonprofits. We have to report the numbers as they are.
Exactly.
But there's so many longer term benefits that you have to that. And then the community is just better when you have those families who are supported and healthy and strong.
Right. Helping families to get child care, connecting them with employment, you know, housing stability. You know, helping people be good neighbors.
That's right.
You know, helping children to be stable so that they can then have stability with school, you know, giving them an opportunity to make decisions. Being homeless, mm-hmm. being at risk for homelessness is very traumatic.
Yeah.
And so with that, you know, we want to impact the family to reduce that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that family, you know, mm-hmm. those being for the kids to be able to stay in school.
Yes.
Even yeah. though mom is going through whatever, just be have that stability must be really important.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, Marlene, we've got about a minute left. We're going to take a break, come back and talk about a few more things related to Decatur Cooperative Ministry. But I think it'd be great for at this time to tell our audience how they can learn more if they're interested or they need the services or know someone who does need the services. Can you give us some information about how to reach you?
Well, if you are in need of services, DeKalb County has the coordinated entry line. So they have a system by which families can, individuals can, anyone who's at risk for homelessness, who is homeless, that they can access services. So coordinated entry can be reached at 404-687-3500. Mm-hmm. And we have that number also listed on our website, www.dcmshines.org.
All right. I love the shines part.
I know. I like it.
Well, we're going to take a break and come back and talk a little bit more with Marlene White, who is the executive director of Decatur Cooperative Ministry. You're listening to The Good Work Show. Audience, welcome back to the show. We've been chatting with Marlene White, who is the executive director of Decatur Cooperative Ministry, an organization serving all of DeKalb County, helping families who might need housing or have a parent in the home that might be experiencing some challenges, and they are jumping in, filling the gap, and just helping those families with whatever services that they might need, including giving them a safe place to live, even whether that means an emergency need for the first 90 days or maybe even a longer term. So that's super awesome. Been around for 50 years. So congratulations about that. Is it your 50-year anniversary this year?
Last year.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
A lot of organizations don't make it. A tenth of that.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So. Yeah. That definitely speaks to the work that you're doing. And, you know, unfortunately also speaks to the need that there's still a need in our communities for the services that you offer. But we're so glad that you're around and you're here to do that. So you also have something called Protect Take Charge.
That's probably a typo.
Project. Take Charge. That is.
I was like, that doesn't sound right.
Project Take Charge.
Yes.
So tell us about Project Take Charge and what that all entails.
Project Take Charge is our homelessness prevention department. Mm. So Project Take Charge offers, we have financial assistance that we offer families who are at risk for losing housing. Now, we've talked about the housing programs, but, you know, from our perspective, wouldn't it be great to just prevent everyone from ever becoming homeless.
Yes. Right?
So one of our largest programs is that homelessness prevention program, and we can offer families that have a dispossessory warrant or in the legal processes of losing their housing an opportunity by paying that up to 3 months rent arrears. We can also help those who are at risk for utility disconnection. You know, and we have resources from the to be able to help families who are also experiencing hunger. Mm-hmm. So we understand that families have to make choices, and people who are right on the cusp and not able to qualify for mainstream benefits mm-hmm. are in need of food assistance. And so we thought of a dignified way to address that issue, and we have a client choice food pantry. So we offer a family or an individual, you know, a box or a bag and say, you choose what you will eat. You know, because you are in need of food doesn't mean I need to decide what you eat. Mm-hmm. And so we have a client choice food pantry. We also have food cooperatives for seniors and veterans, people who are at significant risk for hunger. Mm-hmm. But the notion of being able to help individuals who are at risk for homelessness to, you know, be on a different path by offering them financial assistance, but also offering them financial literacy, you know, giving them resources and education that they can use then should life hit them and they have a challenge in the future. And so we enjoy being able to educate as well as provide that the resource of financial assistance to our families, including families of one.
Yeah, that's so important because a lot of people, if you've never been in the situation, you may not understand. Georgia, they are very quick. The process when of eviction, and you can go really fast through that.
Yes.
And some people think, oh, it might be a long process, but in Georgia,
Because when we talked about this before, it's like weeks.
Yeah, right. I mean, it can happen within weeks.
Because usually you're like, how long do I have? You know, you got some time, you get a warning, you get a thing, but Georgia doesn't do that.
No.
Yeah.
No. So I love the notion of the project Take Charge and being able to, I think you said on the cusp. And being able to jump in and just and change that and give those families that extra support that they might need to stay in their homes. And I mean, obviously, that's the best scenario that you could think of for them, because quite honestly, having to start over for anyone. I mean, just a move. If you had resources, that's daunting in and of itself. But thinking about having to move when you weren't planning to.
Right.
Mary.
And the trauma associated with homelessness is what we want to avoid for our families, for
or
our children.
Or eviction or anything. Yes. I mean, coming back, coming anywhere and finding your stuff not where you left it is going to be a traumatic experience.
If you even found your stuff.
I mean, if you ever found your stuff.
Had an opportunity to get it. Yeah.
And one of the things I would imagine, just from a very practical dollars and cents kind of thing, it has to be cheaper or more efficient to keep people where they are versus having to provide services to get people ramped back up. Talk to us a little bit about that, just in the sense that for, you know, there's a lot of organizations that are out there that are trying to help people that are already experiencing homelessness, but the importance of maybe if we have that safety net to catch people before that happens, how much more practical that just is. Like, if you don't care about anything else, just the practicality of that.
Mm-hmm. Right. It is a lot cheaper. According to HUD, it's 36% cheaper to prevent homelessness than it is to rehouse a family. Decatur Cooperative Ministry also has resources to help families to be rehoused, meaning that we can, if a family is experiencing homelessness, then we can offer them security deposit, that first month's rent, help them get utilities on, to help them to end their homelessness, you know, faster. The federal government has a push to make homelessness rare, brief, and non-reoccurring, and we support that. And so our programs are designed to do just that. One of the things that we're also aware of is that for families experiencing homelessness, homelessness looks very different across our community. So families in hotels and motels, you know, the school systems consider them homeless. And so, you know, we're thinking about them. We're thinking about our families in cars and the parking lots, and we're thinking about our families in the shelters. And we're thinking about how to prevent families from becoming homelessness by providing them the education and the resources and connections to benefits that's going to help them to make that next step and be stably housed.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So tell us about a family that you might have served. And I know we talked a little bit earlier about it's that quality. It's meeting, you know, each individual family and not thinking about how big the numbers, but there's a story, there's a family, there's a person or people behind all of those clients that you serve. So can you talk to us and share a story or two?
Yes, yes. One of the stories that comes to mind began a long time ago. Back in 1988, we were introduced to a woman I'll call Denise. And Denise became homeless with three little girls. And she was going from pillar to post, staying with friends, you know, staying on a couch here, you know, on a floor there. And it was several months, maybe 3 or 4 months before she actually encountered the Cater Cooperative Ministry. And when she encountered us, she was placed in our transitional housing program. And while in our transitional housing program, she obtained or secured daycare or childcare for her children, and she was able to get a job. And then she moved out into permanent housing. Well, the story doesn't end there. Mm. Let me see. About 30 years later, I would meet Denise's daughter.
Wow.
Who applied to serve on our board of directors.
Oh, my goodness.
And so she's currently, on our board of directors. All of Denise's children went on to make their mama proud. Mm. And she talks a great deal about the how meaningful it was for her to have Decatur Cooperative Ministry to help her to secure the child care, to help her with, to support her through what was a very difficult time for her as a single parent. And so, you know, I have the opportunity to spend time with her, and just listening to her talk about her experiences is encouraging for me. She's definitely a go-getter,
mm-hmm.
and so now Robin is a part of our governance structure. She's,
wow.
You know, in leadership of our organization, and I love it.
Yeah, that's a fantastic story.
That's
a
really good one.
Yes. I don't know that we've heard a lot of stories of people rebounding and coming back, but never wanted to come back on the board. That is fantastic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm so glad that you have a 50-year history, because you said 30 years later. That
1988.
Wow, right.
That was
remarkable.
A long game payoff.
Yes.
But it was really good.
Yes, a good one. A good one. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Mm-hmm. So we got about a minute and a half left.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit. How can the community help you? Do you need funding? Do you need volunteers? Do you need all of the above?
Mm-hmm. Right. So I'll start with all of the above.
Okay.
That's usually the answer. All of the above for the
right, exactly.
Right.
And where would we be without our volunteers?
Mm-hmm.
We need volunteers in all of our programs. Our volunteers serve meals to our families in our shelter. They are, you know, such an integral part of what we do. They provide in-kind services and, you know, everything from paper goods, you know, paper towels and toilet paper kind of stuff. To actually coming on site and helping us in the administrative offices, data entry, that kind of thing. Financial assistance support is always important. One, because we do receive federal funding, but the federal government has stipulations and limitations because, you know, the guidelines and restrictions. So we are always looking for the community to support what we do. So that no one falls through the cracks.
Yeah. Yeah.
We want everyone to have, you know, that opportunity for the life filled with peace, hope, and opportunity. And which means that you need more than, you know, what any one person can do. It takes the village.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Marlene, for coming on the show. Congratulations to the 50-year history that Decatur Cooperative Ministry has had, and we wish you so many more, because you guys are doing some fantastic work. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Good Work Show.